Give me the recording.
It's crazy. That's why I'm not in it. I can't. It's not even general. It's psych charities. That's like another mess that I'm doing in February.
I never said I'm curious.
Yeah.
Or even psych specific.
Yeah. It's not so bad, but like I 2.5 weeks and I'm really doing it. So like I put in like 2 hours a night.
Okay, let's begin. Kabbalah Tov. Today is Monday, October 26, 2009, and we're in the middle of our Hashkafa class. I just want to tell you, I looked up who the Maharit was, the Mabit, and I'll tell you next week because it fits into the other class. But let me roll here. So, last week was a very important lection. We dealt with, I hope from the point of view of Hashkafa and our own understanding, it's a very strong knockout punch to this entire concept of sexual freedom and sexual license and this whole attitude that everything goes. And virginity is to be valued, the secret of marriage, the boy, the girl, the innocence, and all that goes with it. We also spoke about the whole concept of a Brit Mila and why essentially there's no reason why women should be jealous of the Brit Mila and try to engender an affair or a ceremony for women. Rabbeinu Shloilem, the woman has a Brit Mila much later in life, and it's part of the secret of the association between a man and woman. After class, David Teller asked me, can you really argue with a feminist and do you really think you can convince them with these points? And I told David, you're absolutely right that with everything I said in class, I'm not naive enough to think that you can win an argument with a firebrand feminist. Just the opposite. I wouldn't argue with her. I would say, look, Halacha has its own way, it moves within its own configurations, and we're in two different worlds. I don't want to argue with you because all it will do will cause harsh feeling. And I agree wholeheartedly with David, but there's another side to the coin. When a person starts to ask questions, then we can start to introduce them and open their eyes and give them sources and show them a Gemara. It can lead them along the way. And I would like to believe that this can be very powerful to an inquisitive teenager in this day and age. I can only tell you stories I've seen with my own eyes of women who came to study for the rabbinate at Hebrew Union College. And you have to know their background, as we spoke about yesterday in class, and we'll talk about this next week as well. We can be dealing with an entire generation that is totally ignorant of their Judaism. They want to be rabbis, and they don't even start to comprehend what Judaism is. They can tell you liberal theories, humanistic theories, but all of you know that this does not a Jew make. There's a lot more to Judaism than just being humanistic and liberal.
You know,
excuse me?
I once volunteered. I spoke to the dean there, a fellow by the name of Mark Moore.
Right.
And I would be going to give an evening program.
Right.
Give a lecture on what is Judaism from an Orthodox perspective, all questions and answers. And
right, right.
Dialogue.
Right. No, I'm not to say that. They don't want it. And you'll know why they don't want it when you hear the rest of the story. So one of the girls, and this story's repeated itself over the decades I'm here, the generations I'm here. This young lady suddenly saw Jews for the first time in her life, suddenly saw Shabbat, suddenly saw a kashrut, started to ask questions. P.S., by the end of the year, the lady who was studying at Hebrew Union College for ordination wound up in the Ve'yir Yerushalayim in one of their multi-programs at the end of Hanov. And this story has repeated itself quite a few times. So it depends. To go in and do battle, I wouldn't make a fool out of myself. But when someone is asking questions, I believe these are the answers that can help. I can only tell you, and I think I mentioned it, and I recertify it again, that years ago in 1980, I was scholar in residence in Denver, Colorado. It was a different type of program. I was there for 2 weeks. It wasn't sponsored by the local community. It was sponsored by the Jewish Agency, and it was a program to bring scholars onto general campuses, the idea being that it gave you a chance to combat Arab propaganda, because already by 1980, the Arabs started to brainwash the college campuses in America, and they've done a pretty good job. You all know what goes on, and I understand Ehud Olmert got up to speak a few weeks ago in Temple University in Philadelphia. We're not talking now some deep south area or an unenlightened area. We're talking about Philadelphia that's going to be in the World Series. And he couldn't speak. He was booed off. He was shouted out. You know, liberals, freedom of speech, and halacha lemaisa. You see what happened. So I'm, you know, not ready to get up and argue, but I can tell you in Colorado, on this program, I was the guest of the University of Denver, I think it's called, or the University of Colorado. I think it's University of Denver. If anyone can correct me, please do. And people started inviting me to local shuls, and among the invitations was an invitation to the Reform Synagogue. So I explained to them that I can't speak at a Reform service, I can't speak as part of a divine service, but I'll be happy to speak in some other, under the roof of the synagogue, but under some auspices that would be far from a divine service. So the men's club, I think it was called, or the Brotherhood, they were the sponsor. And I spoke on Taharat Mishpacha. You should know I picked up friends who came from the Orthodox community that are my friends and admirers until today. Some of them live, many of them live in Jerusalem. 30 years later, they still remember the talk and the impact it left. So, you know, you have to use judgment. But I certainly agree with David Teller's comment. But on the other hand, when they start to ask, I think we can direct them in the right direction. Now, we also spoke about the tragedy of death, and this is Eshet Nurim, and anyone who's happily married comprehends what I'm saying and is overjoyed to see that Chazal understood this as well. We went beyond Eshet Nurim and Zivik Rishon, Zivik Sheni, and here too there's a very potent message in Chazal that we never know what life has in store for us. I often say that sports resembles life. You understand, you can never tell in advance. Logically, it should work out this way. Who knows what will happen in the World Series? And who knows, you know, all these great players, you know, CC can have a bad night, Pettit can have a bad night, and the Phillies are on top of the world. So life is like that. There are always curveballs. You never know what's going to happen. And this is the difference between a Zivik Rishon and a Zivik Sheni. A Zivik Sheni, already you've established your pattern, you're well known, and the Gemara says it so beautifully. Zivik Sheni lefi masav. The story of Rabbi Yitzchok Hanan, you can do an entire master's thesis, or what would they call it, a master's project, on anecdotes in rabbinic literature about the difference between Zivik Rishon to Zivik Sheni. And this is part of life. In other words, there's always a plus and a minus. You can never ever establish the magic of a first marriage. By definition, that innocence is gone. On the other hand, your second wife, to paraphrase Jackie Mason, is not going to ask you to throw out the garbage. It's a different relationship. And that's the Gemara. And remarry, we should. It's not feasible all the time. It depends on age, it depends on the individual, it depends on the first marriage. As I told you, Reb Moshe, the Lubavitcher Rebbe and Mori Rebbe Ralph Soloveitchik, these people weren't capable of remarrying. You use another example, Rav Shach never remarried, Rav Ovadia Yosef never remarried, but on that level, without fear of being called an apikores, I would say they were not good role models. Chazal say, Hashri b'lo isha, Shri b'lo bracha, and there are many reasons why a person has to remarry. I can tell you on Rabbi Yosef Eliyahu Henkin, I don't recall whether he's married once or twice before, but in his old age, he was already blind. He was a sagi nahar. And there was a young lady who had been divorced, had a hard life, in her late 30s. He already was in his 80s. And she married him just to take care of him. He couldn't have a single girl come in. There was Shilas of Yichud. And she said she wanted the schud of taking care of Echad Megadoli Yisrael. And she married him and took care of him. And that's mamish, a true fulfillment of the Gemara, Lefima stuff. Okay, but now I want to roll further and I want to deal with real problems in our world. Anyone going into chinuch, anyone into rabbinate, these are problems that hit us in the eye. Now, I apologize in advance. I have to quote certain sources that, to me, are not modest, but what can I do? It's a Maimon Chazal, and we have to be realistic. The Gemara in Sukkah, Daf Nun Bet, Amid Bet. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Eva Kodin Yeshlo Liyodam, Marira Savei, Masbio Ra'ev. And Rabbi Yochanan puts it very succinctly. A man has a small organ. If he keeps it hungry, it's satisfied. If he satiates it or satisfies it, the more he satisfies it, the more hungry it becomes. Now, what are we talking about here? And here we have the real dilemma of life. And I come back to something I said 2-3 years ago when I started this course. Look, everyone lives a certain lifestyle. I'll give you a simple example. We who grew up in America look upon people who don't have baseball, oh, what they're missing. There's a god from Russia who's lived in America and now back in Israel, one of the gods that works in Gris and BMT. Gris and Machon Lev, mainly in Machon Lev. And I became friendly with him, interesting individual. So he tells me, Echalisht, he's fainting, he misses ice hockey. We grew up in Russia, you know, he looks at us that what we are missing. When I went to Australia, I can tell you, you come a guest, all right, another guest they're bringing over, everyone thinks another jerk is being brought over. And then I started lecturing, and the word went out that this man has something to offer, Baruch Hashem. So I have this major lecture now. It's the biggest public lecture I will give. It's not on a Shabbat. It's at night. There are hundreds and hundreds of people there in Melbourne, Australia. That afternoon, two of my students who are Australians took me to a Australian football game. Now, if you know Australia, they're crazy about sports. And this is unique to Australia. It's a cross between hockey and football. And, 100,000 people there, you can barely see, you need binoculars to see what's going on the field, them in Leif, them in Schluck, them in Leif, and they're running, and I'm used to bait. Anyway, I got up that night, and I began my talk, and you got to know who was sitting in the audience, Yesil Gutnick. He was then on a high run, however, he's a wonderful individual. Halavai, he should be able to run high again. He was a tremendous Baltstucker. Halavai. So he gets up and he's there and the president of Mizrahi and Balabatim and Rabbanim, and I begin my talk. Ladies and gentlemen, today I became a citizen of the great nation of Australia. And everyone's, I went to my first Australian football game and I took out the hat my students gave me. They signed it. The audience went crazy. You know, and this is the way you grew up. Now, I want to ask you a question. Yitzchak, I want to ask you. Are we better off that we have baseball? Are they better off that they have Australian footy, they call it? Are the Russians better off that they have hockey? What do you say? In Saudi Arabia, they play soccer. If you don't do well, they execute you Friday after the prayer service. Baruch Hashem, they know how to take care of their losers. Aryeh, I want to ask you, who's happier? You see, happiness is a function of what you're accustomed to. The American kid, you want steak, you know, the good American food, American ice cream. Israel today has a lot to offer because the Americans have Americanized it. Does that mean your food is any better than falafel or shawarma or the Middle Eastern food? So, you see, when you hear that the lifestyle years ago, you learned the Gemara in Ketuvah, you learned the Gemara in Kedushin, you learned Shulchan Aruch and Ezra, and you see, people got married, girls got married, 12 years old. Rabbi Yitzchok Hanan, when he was 14, his parents started looking for a shidduch for him. Right or wrong? So here you have someone 14, 12, alright, no, Donnie's laughing. He's laughing. What kind of lifestyle is this? What kind of primitive way is this? And the truth is, they were just as happy or happier than we are today. Because what you're accustomed to, what you value, it's a result of the sociological, anthropological, economic reality in which you're born. And you can't say you're any better off than your forebears and the way they lived 1,000 years ago. And this is a very important point to understand when you deal with halacha, when you deal with the history of halacha, okay? And it's absolutely true. The more you think about it, the more you realize this is emet v'amita. Someone once offered me, a very important person, and a person of means and wealth and a big bald stucker and a Jew who loves Torah, said to me, Aaron, why do you have to struggle with money? He offered yours truly and someone who was my classmate by the name, let me not mention the name, he can get upset, but someone has a tremendous mind and he was my classmate. He offered us a stipend for 2 years. We should go study investment banking. And he'd study with Warren Buffett, attend Warren Buffett seminars. You've heard the name, you read the New York Times, you're aware of the business world, Warren Buffett's a lasangazun. Dove, why am I praising Warren Buffett? The man invested $4 billion in Israel, right or wrong? His first investment outside America. God bless him. So he made this offer. I turned him down on the spot. So he said, I don't understand you. I don't understand the other person. You both turned me down on the spot. He said, you'd have money. You could have control. You'd be wealthy. You can give. You can do. Yeah, that's his cup of tea. But my cup of tea is to say a good shiur and uncover a sugar from the minchas yitzchak like I did yesterday. Now, who's happier? You understand? You're an individual. All right, this is very important to understand. However, when all is said and done, the old lifestyle had one tremendous advantage over our lifestyle. And that is very simple and forthright. And no one in the world can deny what I'm about to say. Look, everything in life, when you're ready, you do it. A baby drinks from a bottle. Start giving the baby solids. By the time the baby is 6-7 months, the baby already cereal, bananas. Alright, you can't give him peanuts yet. Baby is old enough, he walks. Baby is old enough, he eats more solids. The baby speaks. Before you know it, he's saying no to you. You know, those of you that have children, they hit the age of 2. What do they call it? The terrible nose. The kid is saying no to everything, giving a shake, running all over. But you see, the minute the kid is ready, he ties his shoes. This is maturity. He goes to school. Everything you do in life when you're physically ready, you're onto it. Only one thing you cannot do when you're ready, at least in our world, and that is sex. And this is where the problem begins, because everything else, you know, you take the non-Jewish view today, the non-Torah view, it's frightening. The non-Torah view says very simply, you ask in a kibbutz in Israel, ask in the secular school system. I told you, I saw their directives. The minute a kid is ready to have sex, you have sex. It's like you eat ice cream when you have popcorn. Just don't get the woman pregnant. Know what you're doing. What? You understand? Sex is denuded of sex. It becomes a simple physiological, biological function with no love, no emotion, no meaning, no depth. But this is a problem. And what happens is, you have kids, I don't have to tell you, high school kids, the hormones are hormones. And here you're teaching them, you know, not to indulge, to absent themselves. And this is a real challenge. And here we have to explain to them that there's no simple solution, but sublimation. The way the modern world works, these are the years you have to get education. These are the years you have to pull yourself together. These are the years you have to straighten out. You have to mature. And we're not in a position to get married yet. We live longer today. Our whole life cycle is different. Today, we get a call, I get literature on the mail, anyone over 50, they have all these clubs for retirees and take you on TU Lim, and I didn't respond to the mail, we got a call, my wife said, what are you crazy, my husband works harder today than he ever worked in his life, I'm running in all directions, you understand? Forget about learning and teaching and writing. I have grandchildren, I go to Hakoto tomorrow, I learn with my grandsons and their friends. Of Wednesday, I have a grandson getting a Sikat Lochem, he's now a tank driver, a frontline fighter. There's a whole ceremony here. No, if the grandfather's not there, your grandson feels bad. So, you know, I'm not a youngster, but I'm a young man. It's a different world today. So you have to explain, you have to quote this Gemara, that when it comes to sex, the Torah was so smart, Chazal was so smart, if you start indulging, it pulls you more and more and more. And if you abstain, then you're able to keep your distance. And Baruch Hashem, when you're ready emotionally and psychologically and economically, and all that goes with it, then, Baruch Hashem, the secrets will be revealed and it will be all the more valuable and meaningful to you, the basis of a lifetime relationship. And this is the Gemara, and we have to teach it to children. Amei Rabbi Yochanan, the Gemara didn't deny it. Eva katan yesh lo ladam. Don't think kids come along. That's why it's very bad policy to skip a Gemara that deals with sex. You should know, when I was a Rebbe for 7 years in Yeshiva University, in Uptown, in the Heights, before I went on Aliyah, I was the only Rebbe who never skipped Gemaras. Reb Mendel Zaks came in, there was once a Bechira, and he had taught them the Agadata in Psachim. He was amazed what the kids know. But I always said, when you skip Gemaras, you're giving children a message that one Gemara is more important than the other Gemara. And that's not correct. The kid has to know that one day he has to master all of Shas, has to have that desire. And when you skip Gemaras on sex, you know, the first thing the kid will do behind your back is take a Sansino or take an art scroll today and figure out the Gemara on his own. And there's nothing like a Rebbe teaching a Gemara like this, the Kedusha Vitar, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Neva Katan Geshto Liyotam, Mariro Savei, Masbio Ra'ev. Now, here in this area, this is a modern Orthodox problem. It's not a Haredi problem. It's not that I'm telling you Haredim don't have sexual problems. I'm not a fool, and I know the score, and I've lived among Haredim, and I live among Haredim, and I know what's going on in the world. So, but this problem they do not have. Their kids, they get separate, their kids are supervised. I don't have to tell you when they're ready to make a shidduch. The shidduch is made, they marry young, premarital relations and all the breakdown that we face today, they do not have. But it doesn't begin there. You come to the negiah. Negiah is a difficult problem that we face with teenagers. And of course, this is why the Haredi world yells and shouts B'nai Akiva and NCSY and mixed groups, and you know, boys and girls together. Before, once you have boys and girls together, the next thing you know, you have Nagia, I don't want to go further, what Nagia leads to, etc. Okay, I can tell you the following. I think I mentioned it this year already, that when I was working on a much earlier chapter, by the way, just a few minutes ago, I got back the 14th chapter from the typist, the 14th and final chapter. So I hope I'm about a month away of passing it all on to New York, Be'ezrat Hashem. So I'm working on an earlier chapter, and I'm writing about one of the great influences in my life, if not the most dominant influence, B'nai Akiva. So I write why I went to B'nai Akiva. Girls, in yeshiva, you never met a girl, you're 14 years of age already, the hormones are acting up. You want to meet to see what a girl is all about. So I went to B'nai Akiva. Not dreaming what would happen as a result of crossing the threshold of B'nai Akiva. And I can't go into it now, but I'm imalei hakarat hatov l'masha kibalti b'B'nai Akiva. I got something there I didn't get in yeshiva, I didn't get from my rabbanim, I didn't get from Gedolei Yisrael. I got something there. Very simple. That money is not the main factor in life. That being a Jew and sacrificing for being a Jew, that's the main factor in life. And if you read my article on Reb Meir Kahana, I have a sentence there that is classic about my generation and the shadow of the Holocaust, etc. So, I looked at it again and I said, boy, this is really going to get me into trouble when people read this. I don't care about getting into trouble, but let me bounce it off the coal, we'll see what they say. And the color was much more black. When I was writing that, there's been a general process why you was moving more towards center. There are reasons why. I can't go into it now. I watch it from afar, and therefore I can appreciate what's happening. But the why you at one point was really veering black. And today, there's more of a counterbalance. The 70s, not so black yet. The blackness begins in the mid-80s, reaches a crescendo in the 90s. And then I imagine I'm asking them this question in the early 2000s. So I read it, and I love my students, and those that understand me, you can be as black as you want, but you can appreciate the Rebbe, fine. I just wrote to England that I will not engage in a debate, because it's an affront to my thinking that this multilithic hashkafa. Listen to my shurim of 2-3 years ago. You'll understand what I'm saying. I spent the whole year on it. And I believe I'm not going to fight anyone that my hashkafa is correct. Baruch Hashem, I grew up with the Rav, and I can be secure in my thinking, and I can honor someone else's thinking. I don't want to debate with anyone. And halacha, I'll debate, not hashkafa. So I read it to the class. I said, fellas, should I leave this in? And unanimously, the class says, Rebbe, if we were writing a memoir like you're writing, we would write, we wanted to meet girls, and that's why we went to NCSY. And the rest is history. So at that moment, I said, you're right, I'm leaving it in. So you go to B'nai Akiva, all right, everyone's yelling, shouting, Nagia, women, all right. A problem it is. We have to educate. Why? I'll just tell you in parentheses, why do I think it's so important? Number one, it's natural. And Torah has to go with nature. We have to control nature. We have to sanctify nature. But we don't run away from nature. And Nazir brings a carbon chatat. And all of you know what Chazal say, but nature he's here at that small min. No, help me. Min hayayin. Because he denies himself wine. He has to bring a carbon chatat. And I can talk about it as it's not for now. Believe me, I have what to say on it. But it's an interesting lesson that a nazir is not a lahatchila, it's a bidiyavet. He has to bring a carbon chatat. So why does the Torah permit nazirah? Because some people need it. That's the greatness of the Torah. It doesn't force your personality into a straitjacket. And if I have a student who has to be an Azir, I'm going to be the last one in the world to poke fun at him. I had Rebbeim who would have... I came back from Chabad one, spending a Shabbos day. I told Reb Noach Feinstein, I told you more than once, that I told him I went to a Buddhist temple, he would have been happier than my having gone to Chabad. No, I'm not like that. Reb Noach, Zeichel Tzadik Levrach, he was a Gon Sheb Goyne. But that was his hashkafa, that was his outlook. I'm not like that. But I understand the problems. Nevertheless, we're not going to get married through shidduchim. It's important we learn how to talk to a woman. It's important we learn how to appreciate a woman. It's important we learn how to respect a woman. Underline the word respect. And ultimately, we may fall in love at the right time. And falling in love is a wonderful, wonderful gift that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us. Okay. So, I want to read a little article to you that appeared 1982, March 10th, in the Hamavaser. The article was written by David Harbader. It's very precious to me because I know the Harbader family from Philadelphia, yet I taught his sister. I don't know where he is today. Anyone recognize the name? We're talking practically 30 years ago. Leah Harbader, who is my student, is here in Israel. She always was a musician. She's a professor of music today at Bar Ilan, I believe. I have nachat when I meet her. Okay, so he tells the following story, and this is at Camp Moshe Varam, told. This is where this happened. Presented with the circumstances of conducting a session for 15-year-old boys and girls in an Orthodox summer camp, I capitalized on the opportunity and addressed them with the following question. How do you define the term modern orthodoxy? The responses were amazingly similar, and the consensus was that a modern Orthodox Jew is one who is scrupulous in observing the laws of Shabbat and Kashrut. Before I was able to question them about the significance of the remainder of the Tayat Mitzvah, one boy was quick to point out, quote, and you don't have to take Negiah and mixed swimming seriously, end quote. Now, it sounds familiar. I'll deal with both. The message of modern orthodoxy seems to be that Judaism consists of several major principles requiring the strictest adherence, while the rest are of secondary concern. And he goes on, and this thing. Let me deal with it on this level. Let me tell you, he has hit the nail on the head. I was away in a hotel, this Sukkot, some of you know, in Caesarea, I always get confused with the Hebrew and English. They have one hotel there. Let me tell you, Bimot HaMashiach, I don't believe they'll come anywhere near equaling the luxury of that hotel. As I said more than once, Sudat Levyatan will have to try quite hard to overtake the food that I saw there. I partook, but I gained the compliment from the guy running it. He said, wow, Rabbi, you really have self-control. So, Baruch Hashem, I didn't gain a pound. I don't say I should lose weight. I didn't lose, but I didn't gain a pound. Anyway, this is quite a hotel. Most of the people there are emigres from the King David. Why did they run there? Because they want to get away from the maddening crowd. Sukkot, as Donnie knows, it's overwhelming with Birchot Kohanim, with the crowds at the Kotel. There are those that love it, and those that run to the golf course in Caesarea, which is right next to the hotel. So I see these people who I know. I taught their children, I taught their siblings. Oy, what can I tell you? Shabbos, 100%. Kashrut, 100%. Mixed swimming, right in the pool. Dress, let me not be vulgar in details. All we'll say is the Haggadah reads, I have the Lubavitcher Rebbe saying this on tape at a Fabregin in 1972. The Haggadah says, Kol Hamaber Harezem Meshubach. And many women say, Kol Hamakatzer Harezem Meshubach. And you see, this is a problem. And it begins with Negir, and I'll swim, mix swimming, and I'm. And it leads worse. But I want to deal with mixed swimming now. Let me tell you a story. Arye, were you here last week when I said, I don't know which class I said it in, I'm a Talmud of the Rav. There's no greater sin than intellectual dishonesty. You know, anyone who grew up with the Rav, you understand what that means. It kills me, that intellectual dishonesty. It's just beyond my comprehension. I don't know. It's a fault line I have. Why don't I get so upset over a Jew who's Machalos Shabbos Ochling Nevelos and Trefa? And I see a frum Jew who's intellectually dishonest. It just overwhelms me. Okay. So let me tell you a story. Early 70s, I'm teaching a Michlala. And a girl asks me, comes over to me. She's Rabbi Macy Gordon's congregation. Rabbi Gordon in Teaneck at the time. In Teaneck. And she goes over and asks Rabbi Gordon if mixed swimming is permissible and if it's true that the Rav went mixed swimming in onset. And you know, Rabbi Gordon came from Boston and he knew the Rav, and he answers this girl that it is true in the past that there was mixed swimming and people went. And he tells the girl, do as you understand. The girl comes to me. She's now come to Michlala. I even remember the girl. Today she's a grandmother, maybe a great-grandmother already. The girl comes to me and then asks me the same question. I tell her, it's absolutely true. They went mixed swimming in the spas, etc. But today, you cannot go mixed swimming. So, fine. She asks me why. I say, it's very simple. When they went mixed swimming 90, 80 years ago, it was like walking on the street. They dressed as if they're on the street. What's the problem? But now...
It didn't wear even...
Eitan, you just control yourself for 5 minutes because it's going to cost you $36,000 to see the picture. Eitan, control yourself. The Rebbe is... No, there's nothing to say because they're going to slaughter you in 2 minutes. Relax, I'll say it for you. Relax. So I tell the girl, nowadays, the bikinis. Any normal man can't go mixed swimming. If you can go mixed swimming in all those bikinis, a kid of 19, 20, you better go see a doctor quickly, because your hormones are lacking. Then she asked another Rebbe in Michlala, I don't want to go into more detail, he's a YU graduate, who denied he ever got smicha from YU. The whole world thought he's a Chaim Berlin boy, a Terry Vitas boy. I had problems with him later, of a much more serious nature, in his attitude towards women. But he goes and asks her, and he gives her a story, what I lectured on in class with Mamzeret and AID, with Ben Sira. Do I have to spell it out? You're familiar with the Medrash? That there was semen in the water, and that's how Ben Sira was conceived, because his mother went mixed swimming, and there was semen in the water, etc. It's a famous Medrash. All right, the Achronim deal with it. And then she tells him what I said, and he gives me a whole argument. Why did you tell the girl the Gedolim went mixed swimming at the hotbeds in Czechoslovakia and Marienbad? You know, you got to tell us absolutely, so that she can, you got to scare her. I looked at him, I said, where's your intellectual honesty? But you see, we have to understand. I'm not going to deny that in Europe, Gedolei Israel went to the hotbeds, and it was not America. In America, if enough Gedolei want to go to hotbeds, I don't know where they are. Believe me, money loves honey. For honey you get money you get honey. They would have separate this, separate that. But I explained there was a big difference. So I always knew I'd have students like Eitan who would say, what the heck is the Rebbe talking about? They dress like they go on the street. Minishamayim Zikuni. And July 30th, 2001, I was in the United States. No, one of the joys of being in America is you can follow baseball live, get to a game, and occasionally you can pick up the New York Times, which may have limited life left, the internet, the website, you understand? It's killing the world. As my generation moves on, there are less and less people who know what a newspaper is. To me, a newspaper, you have to hold, you have to turn the pages. To you, a newspaper is, you got to press the mouse and move on to the next entry. New York Times, July 30, 2001, a tremendous article. The oldest girls' camp in the United States is celebrating 100 years. And the article is accompanied by pictures. The girls swimming today, and don't you look at that picture, and the girls swimming 1914. I blew up the picture from 1914. Eitan described the picture to the class. The Rebbe has just slaughtered Eitan ben David. Look, Halavai, your wife should be dressed like these women who are about to go swimming.
Isn't there, so, I wondered relative to how they dress normally, wasn't that revealing?
Your problem is you are the product of mixed ethnic blood. You are thinking of the Mela in Casablanca and not the streets of Kufna. Come into my office, I have a time machine. It only will cost you $1 million to the IOU list. You sit in the time machine, I press the button, you go back to Kufna, 1902, and you will be amazed the way women dressed. Eitan, when is the last time you saw a Livisha Rav whose wife covered her hair in the streets of Kufna, 1902? Now please, intellectual honesty, and don't get confused with Casablanca. It's a different problem. How did the rabbis allow it? What went on and lit the... Dr. Belkin once got up in public in the mid-60s and his students asked him questions. I think it was the last time he accepted questions. He was still, he went through a difficult period afterwards. Yeshiva went bankrupt. So anyway, one of the questions, why didn't women cover their hair in Lithuania? And Dr. Belkin, yes, it's true, there were those who did, those who didn't, but there was never a machlokes over it, he said. All right. If you know the history of Torah in America, you're going to work very hard to try to find Gedolei Rosh Yeshiva who came to America 40s and 50s whose wives covered their hair at first. Got it? So you're daydreaming about Kufna. He thinks they walked down the street with dresses like you just saw, with their sleeves down to their fingers, with a coat on top of it. Rebbeinu Shel Olam, halavai they dressed in all of Kufna and Vilna the way these women went swimming in that summer camp in Maine in 1914. So that's mixed swimming. I never want to deny that the Rav may have gone mixed swimming in onset, that Jews went mixed swimming. I can't deny it. I know that he did. You can ask for Baron Lichtenstein. Have to be intellectually honest. But there's a tremendous difference the way women wore bathing suits in onset to what women wear today. One time I was in the Mashpil at Sachan years ago, my wife was buying a bathing suit. And I'm looking at the bikinis for sale, and I can't believe the prices. So I asked the sales girl, what's going on here? The bikinis have no cloth. It's just a G-string. What are you paying so much for? And my wife's bathing suit, that's like a semi-dress, cost so much less. So the girl's an intelligent girl. She answers me, it's the design. You're paying for the design. Okay, so that's with swimming. And if I could go back in time and deal with that wise Alec who gave me an argument, I'll never forget it. He yelled at me what I answered that girl. And it's like I'm reliving it now. Everyone, I see them in front of me. I would show him this picture and say to him, these are the facts, and this picture proves it. Now, when you talk about Nagiya, you're getting involved, of course, on a much more difficult level, because this is the Gemara. Masbiu Ra'ev, Mar'irvo Savei. And you see, you begin with Nagiya. All right, it's a whole machloket rishonim whether Nagiya is the Oraita or the Rabbanan. I don't have to tell you, I'm sure you're familiar. The Rambam paskins lahalacha, Seifa Mitzvot as well. I can give you this. One second, where do I have it here? No. One second. Yeah. The Rambam Seifa Mitzvot Lotas say Mitzvah Shin Nun Gimel. You can look up the Rambam. It's a famous Rambam. Maimonides, that Negiya is an Isha D'Oraita. Isha Benida Tumata Lo Tikrav Legalot Ervata. The Lo Tikrav means any physical contact whatsoever. And that includes Negiya. The Ramban and other Rishonim take issue with him and learn it to the Rabbanan. It's a Hachaka, be it a Dioraita, be it a the Rabbanan. Either way, it is common sense. A human being is only a human being. And the minute you start satisfying the sexual drive, it craves more and more. Like what?
An escalator.
Ultimately, it leads to the problems we have today of the new terminology that was coined in the 1980s, Hashem Yirachim, tefillin dates.
Shaking hands with a woman.
That's a different... Hold up. I'll deal with that. I'll answer it in a second. It's all right. Give me a chance. I just want to... An article appeared in the Jerusalem Post, June 8th, 1989. I remember the storm this article had when it appeared. Samuel Heilman, you all recognize the name, Professor Heilman, a sociologist at Queens College in New York.
He wrote a book, Cosmopolitanism.
He wrote many books. He's a top quality sociologist. A sociologist at Queens College in New York yesterday took the wraps up a study showing that about 40% of those classified as centrist Orthodox approved of premarital sex among couples that are regularly dating, and over half approved of this for couples that are engaged. These findings, he said, show that trends among the general population in America are also reflected among Jews, even those who identify as Orthodox. However, Heilman mentioned the practice known among modern American Orthodox as the tefillin date. This, he said, is when a young man takes his tefillin with him on a date, so he will have them with him for his morning prayers after he spends the night with his date. I don't have to tell you that what begins on a low level or a low key or a small flame, God have mercy, can lead to a total destruction of everything holy and everything sacred. When this article appeared and everyone was talking about it before the internet, the website, but nevertheless, America and Israel have a two-way bridge. All I can tell you is, I couldn't believe it. He says 30% tefillin dates, this new terminology. All I can say is, in the 20 subsequent years, I have gotten so many questions. Don't know if it's 30%, but Hashem Yirachem, this is a real problem. Problem is worse than you think. It's not just premarital sex. It's not just a sexual breakdown. Number one, the secret of marriage is gone. Everything we learned about last week. Kibalayach osayach Hashem tzvakat shemo. Eshit nurim kitima es. It's gone. It's finished. Number two. Now we spoke about this last year, I believe, not this year. Why does a man marry? When you look at it logically, marriage is a losing proposition. You take a strange woman. You don't even know her. You marry her. You have to support her. You have children. You can't sleep at night. Responsibility. I can ask Dov how much you spent over the years educating your children. No, it's hundreds of thousands, if not millions by now. No. A guy makes a cheshbon, mali letzarezu. And you know, you've seen people who never marry. Some of them are quite happy, jolly, never married. To me, it's a rachmana. I know someone, we're davening at the same minyan, we're the exactly the same age. His birthday is in Sukkot, my birthday is in Hanukkah, so I'm a few weeks younger. Exactly the same age. I remember years ago, we're davening in the shtibbel in Yerushalayim, and a little kid is yelling, Saba, when he sees me, he comes running over and jumps on me. And he's a big kid today. He's 24, he finished Tesder, he's in university. He's a source of joy. God should watch over him. Just got back from Miluim. This other person never married. He looked up. Who's this little kid calling Saba and jumping on? But you see, perhaps the dominant force that makes us marry are the hormones. The sexual drive. Don't forget Chazal. Without that sexual drive, there were no eggs. Chickens didn't lay eggs. It could very well be that Freud is at least partially right. I quoted the Rav on that, if you recall. So you see, when sex is available free of charge, why marry? Why fall in love? How can you fall in love? And then once you marry, you know what's amazing? How much divorce there is among people who played around and messed around. And why? Because marriage is not sacred to them. They can be Shomrei Shabbat and Shomrei Kashrut. Comes to marriage, their whole attitude is different. The sacredness is gone, the kedusha is gone, the sanctity is gone, the uniqueness is gone. And I've seen so much divorce. We made a mistake. It's not what I thought. Who has to be bothered? Used to living single. Why have someone around my neck? We're in two different worlds already. And this is the greatest challenge to us as Torah Jews. I quote the Rav now. I'll give you a vort from the Rav that I've used without exaggeration 10,000 times plus in my life. And the Rav said it time and again. Ger v'tosha banochi imachem. Who says that? Abraham Avinu. Who does he say it to? The Bnei Chet. He's talking about the Morat HaMachpelah. And he says, Ger v'toshav. And the Rav said, the Jew eternally will always be a Ger v'toshav. On one hand, we're part of the big world. We live in the big world. Today, where you can live in Me'e Sharim, you still have a computer in your house. Everyone is affected. This is what I alluded to yesterday when I dialogued with Yitzchak, that the Haredi world is making a little progress in coming into the bigger world. And I just read last night in an article in Makar Rishon from this past Shabbat that there are now 500 Haredim in the army besides Nachal Haredi who have come into various programs in the army because they want to be integrated. And they're remaining Haredim, but they're Haredim who serve in Tzahal, who love Tzahal, who love the country, appreciate the country. And this is already not just a little trickle. It's become a little bit more of a stream. I know Nachal Haredi is not that Haredi, and I have four grandsons in Nachal Haredi. You tell me about Nachal Haredi, I see it up close. So I know what the story is there. But these are top quality Haredim who are in intelligence in the army. And the army is going out of its way, to encourage them because they're highly motivated. These are top quality soldiers. These are not playboys. These are not kids from a leftist kibbutz who couldn't care less about what the future is here. All right? So we're part of the big world. But at the same time, we are a gerim. We're different. We're individuals. Our thinking is different. Our values are different. And this is the great challenge. And we can't allow the toshav to influence the ger within us. There has to be that happy balance. Ger v'toshav anochi imachem. Torim derech eretz. Toru Mada, Toru Vavoda, call it what you wish. There is this constant dialectical tension. And this is where, with sexual standards, we have to be aware this is part of the challenge as well. And I can tell you terrible stories. One, a Shemesh Shabbos Jew, adultery. Mamish adultery, a shiler in Queens of Mamzeret. I don't want to go any further, no one should identify. The rabbi handled it beautifully. You know, kids are involved, Mamzeret. So they asked this maneuver, how do you do things like that? You're a Shomer Shabbos. He says, well, I am a Shomer Shabbos, but I have my own opinion about the sexual laws. Hey, I'm moron. Kedusha Betara, I have my own opinion, sure. Tirif Adat, Niyuf. I'm saying it. God have mercy. And this is Geber Toshav. If you want another example, not in sex. Look what went on in Muncie. Who would ever dream? I was invited to a wedding. My student from the Colo got married. The wedding was in the atrium. Who would ever dream I might have eaten treif that night? God have mercy. No, I'm a nuvel sheba menuvalim, a guy with a beard, a bal tfilah, a dafyomi magid shia, a bal kore, they tell me par excellence. And when it comes to the loss of kashrut, he sold hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of tons of nevelet and treifa. No, America, money. Money's more important than Torah Hashem. It's a total breakdown. You see today with the liberalism, with Obama, with the homosexuals, this lesbianism, it's frightening. Anything abnormal becomes normal, normative. Anything abnormative becomes normative. God have mercy. Now, Yitzchak, in relation to Nigiyah, I said more than once. Nigiyah l'shem ta'ava, l'shem hana'a. Where there's no hana'a, there's no ta'ava, so it could be there's no Isa. It's a machlokes haposkim. It also depends, I've told you more than once, it depends upon the circumstances. If a lady my age offers me her hand, a lady in her 40s, 50s, I'm not going to embarrass her. I will shake hands with her. My Rebbe shook hands. I saw halacha l'maisa. I told you the story of Mrs. Pearl Cotton. Or when a BMT kid asks me, Rebbe, I see my girlfriend from Machon Gold Saturday night, and I always tell her, over your Divrei Torah. And she gets so excited with your Divrei Torah, she wants to give me a Yashik Koach for telling it over, and she offers me her hand. Am I allowed to shake it? Absolutely not. There's a big difference between an 18-year-old girl offering the boy her hand because the Rebbe's Divrei Torah, God, Shemi Rachem, to an 80-year-old woman offering your hand. And that's the story I told you with Mrs. Pearl Cotton. I'm an eye-ear witness. I'm not telling you b'shem Omro. You know the story, right? I came in, it was before Pesach. So you wish a person a good nyah before Rosh Hashanah. You wish a person a freilich in a cushion and freilich in Pesach before Pesach. Mrs. Carden ran the graduate school. I describe her in my new work. Do you know Rabbi Dr. Bernard Lander? Bernard Lander is one of the greatest individuals alive. The man is in his mid-90s and he's still creating new worlds. He is the only one I ever met in my life who could do three... No, he and Reb Chaim Zimmerman, they would do three things at once. So when you do three things at once, I describe it in my book, exactly what he's doing, three things at once. Here in the office, I meet him in a... You got to read it. It's worth reading. You'll die with laughter. How I hid myself. I didn't want to see him again that day because I would get nervous just watching him. He's talking with me, dictating a letter, and he's on the phone. He's eating, he's on the phone, and he's reading the New York Times at the same time. So to run a graduate school, you have to be organized. Mrs. Carden was a crippled widow, an elderly woman. She was the height of organization. She would say to him, Dr. Lander, you're giving a speech tonight. You have to change to a white shirt. Open up your attaché case. I called your wife this morning. She put a white shirt in for you. He opens it up. There's a white shirt. Takes it, goes and changes. Okay? So one time I come into the office, Far Pesach, and she's crying. I said, Mrs. Carden, why are you crying? You know, I was your age already. I was like working for my doctorate. I was 24, I would say. 24, 25. And she says to me, Arnold, you won't believe what happened. It was some guy in Bernard Revel graduate school. She just offered him her hand and he refused to take it. And she said 5 minutes earlier, Rabbi Soloveitchik shook her hand when she wished him a freilich and kushrut and Pesach. You understand? So that's my answer to Yitz. I'm well aware. But on the other hand, you can't give a blanket cheder because you're dealing with a riot.
The ambassador of India was a woman. So he was at the airport together with all the Pamalia and they shook hands and wished them well. So they jumped off.
I don't know. I don't know. It has to be checked. And on the boat coming to America, the Satmar Rebbe traveled on a boat, a Dutch boat, Dutch lines. And there were famous people on the boat, including the Satmar Rebbe, and the Queen of Holland came aboard to wish them a safe journey. This was 46 after World War II, one of the earlier journeys through areas that were once minefields. Maybe the first, I don't know. They had to clear up the mines. And she wanted to shake hands with the Heiliger Rebbe. So that's when I was told that he put on gloves and shook hands with her. So I don't know. Check it out. I was not an eyewitness, but it's worth checking out. If I'm not mistaken, Rabbi Abba Brandspiegel, Abba was on that boat. You know, it's worth checking out with Rabbi Abba. You got to ask him what he remembers. That's all. Excuse me, I don't know. I don't use email, so I'm the wrong guy to send an email. Now, let me go a drop further. I want to show you something beautiful, and it's a continuation of what I spoke about yesterday. Matan, do you remember yesterday I spoke Balei Tshuva? I criticized the Haredi world for some elements of the Haredi world, I don't want to say all, for treating them as second-rate citizens. Correct, Dani? And remember, I told you, Baal Tshuva, you have to have the greatest respect for. B'makom shebaal tshuva omdim ein tzadikim gemurim yomdim. Right or wrong? And sometimes Baalei Tshuva have more understanding of Yiddishkeit and more appreciation than we who are FFBs, because we grow up, we take it for granted, and they can see everything clearly. It's like a gast in shtut, zet there's a Yiddish expression, when a guest comes to the city, he sees for a mile. He sees things that you don't see because you're used to it, you're running around, you're here, you're so accustomed to it, nothing wakes you up, nothing speaks to you. And Baalei Tshuva have this advantage. I have to tell you, I have found this time and again. So here, is a Xerox copy, I had to make it smaller, of the weekly magazine of Maariv. It's called, this is from July 30th, 1999. It's 10 years ago, Sof Shavua. And here you see a very interesting picture. Yisrael Beitar, he Bito. And this is an article about a young lady, Michal Lieberman, who was 16 years at the time. Anyone recognize who she is? This is Avigdor Lieberman's daughter. And Avigdor Lieberman, 10 years ago, was beginning to become a personality on the Israeli scene. See, Avigdor Lieberman had one advantage. He came here as a teenager, so he integrated. He came here too old to lose his Russian accent, but young enough to go to high school, finish high school here, go to college here, Hebrew University, do the army. In college he was head of the Likud organization, got to know Bibi Netanyahu. So Avigdor Lieberman has a lot of power, a lot of success here, because unlike Sharansky, Sharansky, when you hear his Hebrew, you hear the Russian. Avigdor Lieberman, you hear his Hebrew, you hear Israeli Hebrew, but with a Russian accent. There's a big difference. And he became a personality already 10 years ago. I don't have to tell you that. Lieberman and Shas today control the country. At this moment in time, Bibi can remain in power indefinitely because he has both Lieberman, Yisrael Beiteinu, and Shas behind him. Now, if you read the newspapers this past year, you know that they're investigating Lieberman in the whole question of laundering money and all the Russian oligarchs, if I'm pronouncing it right, who were friendly with him and gave him money. All right, these are real problems. I don't know what's going to happen. I just heard in the news that within a few weeks they're going to give a decision whether to indict him or not. I don't know what the truth is, and certainly I can't take sides. I can't have an opinion. But one thing you should have seen and picked up from the news, that his daughter, who today is married, her hair is totally covered. And his daughter became religious years ago. And this is a fantastic interview with this girl and how she became religious. And some of this interview, you hear the echo of a typical American kid speaking. And she starts to talk about how she went to this school, and I think it was she doesn't identify the high school, but the area where she grew up, I would imagine it's a religious Zionist high school. Could be in Efrat, I don't know, because she grew up in that area. She was in a yeshiv with her father, Noktim, which is a mixed yeshiv, religious and irreligious. And at that time, and I couldn't believe this question, because this very question came up in the Kollel, and I have been responding to it for on to 30 years today. What was the question? At that time, they were fighting over the Bar Ilan Road. Remember Bar Ilan? Bar Ilan, you know Yerushalayim. Bar Ilan goes right through the heart of Haredi land. There is not a Mechallel Shabbos anywhere in that area. As a matter of fact, you're not going to find a Kippah Shrugah for kilometers and kilometers around Bar Ilan, to the south, to the north. My youngest son-in-law is a dentist, so most of his practice, he took over the practice of Dr. Wallach, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. So most of his practice is Haredim, Eta Haredit. He moved to that area. He said, what am I paying rent in the center of town if all my patients are from the Geula, Meir Shearim, and the northern area? So I know that area well. His office is 1 minute, it's Yisa Bracha, right off by. Bar Ilan. All right, my son-in-law is a dentist, so they tolerate his kippah shrugah. He also has a beard down to the floor. He can sweep up grus in a minute flat with his beard. So, Baruch Hashem, they'll call, and they're very nice. I remember I walked there, and I'm waiting. He's not in yet. He hasn't opened yet. I was there early, and right next door is a Haredi dress shop. The woman comes out, oh, sit down, can I bring you water? I couldn't believe how nice she is. She didn't know why. I was from a hole in the ground. Then I told her I'm Dr. Samuel's father-in-law. Okay, so the fight was going on over Kfish Bar Ilan, and they're throwing rocks and like what went on now over the parking lot. So there was a whole debate in the class. And finally the teacher asked the class, if you had a choice, would you be Haredi or Chiloni? If this was your only choice. It's right here on the article, page 60. And the overwhelming majority of the girls responded, we would be Chiloni. We hate the Haredim. And these are religious girls, more or less. Now, before I continue with her article, I just want to tell you in parentheses, how does this affect the Kollel? I had a Talmud in the Kollel, I'll tell you his name, Rabbi Abby Kelman. Anyone remember him, Dove? Remember Kew Gardens Hills? His father was a medical doctor there. Do you remember Abby Kelman married an Israeli girl? And her brother went to the Gush. And Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein, every once in a while, has what's called a press conference, as he had one yet this year, where you can shoot questions at the Baron from the floor. So in the Gush, he had a press conference. And in the press conference, he was asked, if your only choice was to be Haredi or Chiloni, what would you choose? And the Baron responded, Haredi. Half the student body was going crazy. How could Rabbi Aaron choose to be a Haredi and not a Chiloni? Those rotten, vicious, no good, primitive Haredim who cause Chilul Hashem with all the prejudice and all that people will say, and the enlightened, liberal, wonderful Chiloni. And this kid, Abby's brother-in-law, was going crazy. And Abby came to me, that kid can't understand Rabbi Aaron, can I give him answers what to tell his brother-in-law? Alright, I don't have to tell you, if I had a choice between Chiloni or Haredi, obviously I'd be Haredi. I mean, there's not even a choice, I have to be a Shomer Shabbos. But I don't want to deal with my answer now. What I want to deal with is in this article, what's the stupid question? Why? Well, it's a good question.
I think so.
Every Israeli kid has to struggle with it.
Why? That's the problem.
Believe me,
that. If you struggle with that problem, then there's a problem in society.
Agreed, 100%. That's why I hope Rakefet, when he says he won't debate, is creating a Kiddush Hashem.
But within our world, we ask such a question.
In the high schools here? Absolutely.
No, that's not where that question was asked.
So the question was asked in the Gush. Fine, you got to remember the army splits the population here. These kids are bitter at the Haredim. Why should they serve in the army and the kid who grew up across the street in Hanov doesn't serve in the army?
I'm not understanding each other. The question itself is a meaningless question.
To what?
Who has that choice?
But
how's it a meaningful question?
It's a meaningful question in a theoretical sense. You follow?
In a theoretical sense, it's like asking a question that used to be asked in the 70s. Do you consider yourself an American or a Jew?
Or red?
Silly question.
And wait a minute. And red or dead? Remember that question?
It's silly.
Okay, so this is the type of question, but the question is powerful because it shows the educational challenge. It shows what we're up against here. Do you know, and I my grandchildren consider Haredim Afikrashim. And I asked my daughters, all my daughters said, every last grandchild feels that way. I said, why do they feel that way? the army. And I try to explain to them, you have to know where the Haredim are coming from, what their background is, the way they were raised, what they're frightened about. And we have to be a good example to show you can have Ger V'Toshav, as I just...
Did you answer people of me?
No, I hope not. I don't know.
But you just gave the answer.
I hope not. But they consider it. It's a real problem. You got to understand from their point of view where the question is coming from. Anyway, it doesn't matter if you consider the question.
You identify more.
I understand. That's exactly the question.
But that's my question.
That's exactly, if you had a choice. Okay, it doesn't matter. We're quibbling. It's not important.
With whom do you identify?
She, fine. She, So she is describing what happened in her class. After that happened, she says, it started a process of thinking, who am I? And she said, I don't have to be Haredit, but I have to be a good Jew. And she says, I made up my mind to become a Shomeret Shabbat. Now remember, she's coming from parents from Russia. Parents who know very little of Yiddish kind, although they came in their high school years. She says, and this is so typical, she said, when I began to observe Shabbat, my father laughed at me. He thought it was a passing fancy. How many Balei Tshuva will tell you that story? They started to become frum, and their parents humored them along. You know, it's a passing fancy. Rabbi Ruchin Gerelico had a very sharp tongue, and at times he was not entirely wrong with his sharpness. So I remember him once carrying on in class in the 1950s, you had the first Balei Tshuva on the American scene. Not the first. Historically, there were Balei Tshuva already in 1920, the Malachim, but it was more than just extremism, more than just the Williamsburg phenomenon. You had the first inkling of Balei Tshuva. And Rabbi Ruchin Gerelich goes crazy. He says, yeah, they're trying out Yiddish plank like they're trying out dope, like they're trying out liquor. Or it's like my story. When you inspired a kid to come in Aliyah, the parents would go ballistic. I had this in BMT. I had this in Gold, Mechvala. And if you would tell the parents, your kid is on drugs, not so terrible, he'll outgrow it. Your kid is on liquor, not so terrible, he'll outgrow it. Your kid is a Baal Tshuva and wants to settle in Israel? Oy vey, what did I do wrong? So, you see, the parents, the father, all right, it's teenage, it'll pass. Her mother encouraged her. And this comes back to what basically a woman is closer to God. I spoke about this last year. I have sources for it. The mother encouraged her. And then she talks about how slowly but surely her mother cooperated. She saw the girls not eating Shabbos. The mother is cooking. The mother brought in a plot of Shabbat. The mother went to cooking classes, learned how to cook Jewish food. They got tapes to tape up the lights that you shouldn't. She describes it as special tape that she would tape up the light in the refrigerator. Of course, today you buy an Israeli product, there's a switch they have on it. It's an Israeli patent that you put the refrigerator on a Shabbos mode. It's a different world today. It's fabulous. You have no idea how many halachic Rav Yosef's people should kiss the feet of Tzomet and Rav Halperin's Institute, how they have solved the she'elah of opening a refrigerator on Shabbos. It's just magnificent. All right, she describes little by little what they did. And then she says, as I became more religious, I dealt with sneer, she said. Until then, I was free with my hands, with boys, we had a good time. And then I said, no. And I quote her, I did this understanding that I didn't even get involved in Nigiyah. It's not that I made fun of those who did. But I would explain to them that Nagia can sometimes be the start of a much deeper sexual relationship. And this is something that I have to leave to marriage. This is something between a husband and wife that has deep meaning. And the more I abstain now, the more I will understand it and appreciate it later. And I think that's just a beautiful answer from a woman who begins with such little Yiddishkeit and ultimately accomplishes so much. She's happily married today, and as I said, the newspapers had a field day because she covered every strand of hair, as is the Chadali fashion, Haredim Dafiyim Liumim, or those who live in Yehuda Vishomran, wonderful Jews filled with Mesirat Nefesh, and also attempting to strike a balance, Ger B'Toshev Anochi Imachem. I want to touch upon one more problem which we won't complete today, which may inyan li inyan, may eto inyan. I wish it was not true what I'm about to tell you, but I lived it, I've seen it, I've gotten so many she'ilot. Michlala, the early 70s. And you have to understand, the American girls coming to Michlala, certainly at that time, were affected by all that was happening in the general community. Today, within the YU world, it's a much more accomplished and established Torah world where you have a good balance. I don't say all, but I know in Stern College, Yeshiva College, you have many wonderful young men and women who are able to balance out the Ger V'Toshev and dignity. The 70s, at times we lost, made mistakes. This girl comes over to me. Should single girls go to mikveh? And, you know, I was shocked. I was naive. I came in Aliyah 69. The first few years were very difficult years of adjustment. And it was a very difficult financial time because by the time we opened our eyes, the Yom Kippur war was upon us. And believe me, we don't know until today how we survived. It's beyond comprehension because Egypt could have moved into Beersheba on Yom Kippur, and the Syrians should have been in Tel Aviv. No one can understand it. It was just a handful of tanks up north. And you know, down south, the Egyptians were rolling, and they thought it was a trap. That's why they stopped. They couldn't believe that they could move so quickly once the Barlev line fell. And then life became very difficult. You know, we look back now, the scars are deep, but thank God we're alive. It was every... I didn't have money for food the fourth week of the month. And it's not that I live big, or it's not that I don't work hard. I had two full-time jobs, Michalal and the Jewish Agency. And so I used to go to Machon Gold for Shabbos, and God rewarded me. I would go to Machon Gold, and Nechama Leibowitz would hear I'm coming for Shabbos. She would say, Lamashani lo avo. She would do the walking distance. She would come Friday night, and she would be eating with yours truly on one side and my daughters on her other side. So my daughters, maybe they turned out as beautifully as they did because they had the skut of knowing Nechama Leibowitz, and she would bother me. Arya, what do you think? What do you think bothered Nechama Leibowitz to know the Rav's Torah? She would bother me more and more and more and more. She was, you couldn't satiate her with enough of the Rav's concepts, Baruch Hashem. Just one second. What is your name? One second. You're from Maimonides, Chessis. You weren't here last week, right? So that's why I'm looking at you. Noah. All right, I'm happy to see you. And I don't see Michael Emerson. And David Bardow, I miss him.
Bardow.
Pardo. We ought to call them Pardo, not Bardo, like the name should be. Anyway, now this is a very serious question. It is said, and I can't prove it, and I don't know, and I wasn't there, but it seems to be true, but I don't want to use a name. Chachamim hizaru b'divreichem. That a Rebbetzin speaking on the west side of New York in the 60s, late 60s, while all this was unfolding, she spoke aloud and said, you know, this is the reality. Boys and girls are sleeping together. Maybe it would be better if the women went to mikveh. And that way it would modify the prohibition. As you all know, when neither is an isha karet, and if a woman goes to mikveh, she's not married, could be it's a lav, machlokes rishonim, could be it's not a lav, it's a machlokes rishonim, could be. According to the Rambam, it would appear to be a lav, but it could be if no, could be.
No, it's
the
debate about whether
Kadesh
is someone.
It could be. I spoke about this with all the sources years ago. Could be if, like, a Pilegish. Rovri Shainim were Matir. Pilegish.
Even in the Middle Ages, they were Matir? No, that would have been back in the day.
Rovri Shainim. No.
In their time?
In their time, some were Matir. Some held. Relax. I'll talk about it, but not now. Hold off. Could be the Rambam, of course, asks us to be legish, except for a melech. All right. So I can't say that having premarital relations is muta, but at least it would minimize the prohibition. And this is what this Rebbetzin said in public. So it caught on, and people started asking this question. And I answered the girl, someone gave me a backhanded slap in my face Friday night, that Baruch Hashem, I'm never silent, I have what to say. All right, so I answered the girl very quickly, and I said to her, in my humble opinion, permitting unmarried girls to go to mikveh would be a total breakdown of the sanctity of the Jewish family. Everything we educate for, everything we fight for, with one psak like this, it would totally nullify the centrality and sanctity of marriage. And then I started to think, you know, who am I? Me or Nochi? I'm a kid at the time. Early 70s. Who am I to answer like this? Maybe they're right. Go to mikveh. Avoid any sakarite. So I called the Rav. And I asked Rebbe. Rebbe's school was firm and strong at the time. You know, I can listen to tapes of the Rav, and I can tell you more or less the year by his voice. You hear in the mid-70s how much weaker his voice gets, and you hear in the 80s, it's like a whisper. You listen to the Rav in the 50s, he's like a giant, a power. Rebbe's school was strong, and he told me, I agree with you, not just 100%, but 200%. And I want you to quote in my name that it's totally usa, it will break down the Jewish family. Now, I leave you with one simple question. Is this something new? Has it just appeared on the scene on the Upper West Side of New York, late 60s? Or do we have precedents? Yetzer lev adam ra minu rav. Nothing is new under the sun. Ein chadash tachat hashemesh. Do we have sources? Can we show the modern world And again I stress, in the Haredi world, they do not have these problems before marriage. They have other problems after marriage. Okay, I'm not a fool. It's not that I'm saying their way of life is perfect. We have problems. Absolutely not. They have sexual problems and we have sexual problems. But our sexual problems are mainly premarital. Their sexual problems are essentially postmarital. It's a difference of lifestyle, but we're all affected. The Gevet Toshev, we can't escape the big world around us. You read me, Michael? These are facts. I can't. We can't debate this. These are facts. But I don't. I'm not here to deal with their problems. Let their rabbanim deal with it. I'm here to help our world. To reiterate, today was an honest sheyua. Yes, we have a beautiful way, a God-given way, but we have a problem. Biologically, we're ready to enter the world of sex at 14, 15. No. Sociologically, economically, psychologically, morally, call it what you wish, you can't enter this world until much later. And this is sublimation. There's a social lag, a physical lag, call it what you wish. But the Gemara says it beautifully. Eva katan yesh biyadam. And this is the whole problem of Nigiyah. And mixed women. And I have to say, I enjoyed showing Eitan that picture. Don't forget, it's a New York Times picture. It's not a computerization. It's fabulous. And when I found that picture, I wanted to punch that guy in the nose. If I could go back in my time machine to 1972 approximately, I would punch him in the nose, because I later had an incident with him at Machon Gold that was terrible. You know, and then I found out in that family there are sexual hang-ups. I don't want to go into detail, forget it. But to give me an argument that I was intellectually honest, that I didn't give the girl some cock and bull story about Ben Sira, Rebbeinu Shel Olam, I told her where I wouldn't go mix swimming. I told her it's Sasa. But I explained the Rav and what you're asking and what you know. And this girl came from a rabbinic family, so she knows what goes on. It's a different era, a different dress. That was the New York Times. I then showed you the article about Michal Lieberman, which is fascinating. Balei Tshuva Kol HaKavod. All right, someone who comes just to try out Yiddishkeit instead of dope, drugs, opium, all right, maybe they'll throw it away a year or two later. But someone who's been from 3, 5, 7 years, and you don't accept them as equals, they're better than us, not just equals. Welcome Shabbat Shuvah May, what I quoted yesterday. And now we're coming into the whole problem of single girls going to mikvah. I want to make one correction on yesterday's sheyur, a minor correction. I said in the movie, A People Apart, I think it's called, the documentary that won so many awards by YU graduate them. So Jack Gold is the hero of the movie. He's the man I spoke about who survives Hitler, wanted to throw it all away. And his wife says, why give the Nazis another victory? So I think I said his kids who went to BTA, Brooklyn Talmudical Academy, I think I said they became square Hasidim. They became Bavava Hasidim. I just want to correct myself, because when I recalled the movie, yeah, they were square Hasidim in there, but not his children. It was a different two brothers who were interviewed. It's a very fascinating documentary, and if you haven't seen it, it's worth seeing. Now, I want to show you something else. Gentlemen, every year I give the Rakefet Award for the most innovative adult education. You're going to go into the Rabbinate, adult education is so important. How do you attract them? How do you pull them in? Noach, there's Young Israel of Century City. Have you heard of it?
Yes.
Y.U. Musmach, Rabbi Elazar Muskin. He's the senior rabbi today in the Beverly Hills, the greater Beverly Hills area. He has one advantage, Aryeh. He is adjacent to Hollywood. And he has balabatim, among them my own students, who make a living out of the movie industry. Accountants, playwrights, screenwriters, you know, today, Ger V'Toshav, Torah Jews have succeeded as Toshavim, not just as Gerim. So he has people who every year take another thing. This is their program. It's based upon just press the play. To take out the tape.
Are
you taking
out?
Eject. You see the thing here? Okay, close it. Press the button, play. This year, it's based upon the Olympics. Look at the way it's spelled. The 210 Olympi. You see, he has a double C in there. Y-I-C-C. Young Israel, Century City. And I have to tell you, it is a piece of art. So if anyone, you can take this, you can pass it around, you can enjoy it. But if anyone is going into the rabbinate, learn from Young Israel of Century City how to attract the crowd. Here is a picture which, if you're interested and have a feeling for Torah history, this is Reb Dov Schwartzman at a farewell party where he's going to America to marry Reb Aaron Cutler's daughter. The person sitting on his left is Reb Yitzchak Kulitz, who later goes on to be chief rabbi of Jerusalem. The person sitting on his right is whom we spoke about last week, Reb Tzvi Yehuda Meltzer. Gentlemen, I wouldn't miss Sunday share if my name was Yitz Rubin for anything, because we're going to deal with the apostate Jew. Until we meet again in health and happiness, Das V'danya. Dov, a pleasure. Thanks for coming. If anyone wants a copy of the picture, yours for the taking. Matan, can you do me a favor?
Sure.
Your sidekick did not come today. What's more frightening is his tape recording for the thousands of people listening over the world did not arrive. This, I hope, recorded. What do I do? Just press stop now? I hope it worked.